Welcome to Postscript. My name is Dave Severns, one of the pastors here at Compass Point Bible Church, and today with me is lead pastor Paul Eastwood.
How's it going?
It's going well. It's good to have you back on Postscript, Paul.
It's been a while.
After a month with Chris, which we have loved talking
about. Yeah, I've been enjoying all the fasting conversation and
Yeah, and I mean, maybe we'll touch on that. Are you still going to fast a day this week leading up to Easter?
Chris encouraged us
this week. So
yeah, and I think I've mentioned with our staff. I haven't really talked a lot about it, on Sunday morning. But for me personally, what fasting has done, you know, not in the sense that it has created some kind of like mind-blowing experience where I just hear the voice of God and the mm-hmm. presence, whatever. But I would say that, for me, whenever I get hungry, I just go and get a snack or right. I do something. And so on that day, and I try to fast on Fridays, that that when I am hungry, it turns my attention to God. And yeah. and I've just found for the last number of weeks, the opportunity to return my attention to God over and over and over again throughout the day has actually been a really kind of cool experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you. It's been wonderful and challenging and something we're going to keep trying to experiment with, I think, but we are here to talk a little bit about this last Sunday, and you preached something around Palm Sunday, right. which is right this moment in this church calendar. I read the passage at the beginning of the service, yeah. Jesus coming into Jerusalem on a donkey with these people crying, Hosanna, which means God save us, and waving palm branches. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the historical narrative and context, but why don't you give us a little recap of what you preached on Sunday?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, as we know, all the Gospels cover this very specific account, and it is absolutely unapologetically a scene. Like Jesus creates a scene that could be Palm Sunday, right? Because it's this weird, like all kinds of these pictures being painted. He's fulfilling prophecy. He's got the crowd. He's all this kind of stuff, and it's just this very, very vivid scene. That really helps us identify Jesus, and more than that, identify the kingdom that's coming, identify the king, and ultimately identify us as his people of the kingdom.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's all kinds of fun symbolism, right?
Yeah.
When you talk about a scene, I don't know why, but I'm getting a picture of like a music video and the things that artists do, which is probably dating myself. These don't happen anymore. But the thing, like, what they wear and what they're on, or they, like the things around them say about them. And we've got these unique things like Jesus coming in on a donkey instead of a horse.
Yeah.
Right. And then the palm branches.
Yeah.
Which are really cool. I was reading, a pastor on social media, Rick Valitis, who kind of gave some of the history of the palm branches, and I just thought it was really interesting. So 150 years prior to Jesus, Judas Maccabeus led the Jewish people to victory over another dynasty. And after leading them to victory, the crowds were celebrating and waving palm branches. So mm-hmm. Judas, after that, who was known as the Hammer, gives mm-hmm. you kind of the idea of what kind of leader he was. He stamped an image of palm branches into their coins, which symbolized Jewish victory over all of their oppressors, right?
Yeah.
So like this is a really strong image that's seared in the minds of the people, and they're seeing Jesus come in and they're like, you are going to take down the bad guys, right? Like, finally we're overthrowing the tyrants.
Yeah.
You've got this. And yet the story continues and we're like, well, that's not quite what we were imagining.
Well, and that's the best part about Palm Sunday is that the story continues and he does exactly that. He wins over evil, but he does it in such a different way, right? Another place that, blew my mind as I was going through this, and I actually didn't include this on Sunday morning, but in the next couple of weeks, actually, we're going to be talking about heaven and talking about the new heavens and the new earth.
Yep.
And one of the things that there's a description of this new reality in the book of Isaiah, in Isaiah chapter 55, and he talks about this idea that the mountains will sing and the trees will wave their hands and wave their leaves, essentially, right? And so in Luke's gospel, when the Pharisees confront Jesus and say, hey, stop your disciples, tell them to be quiet, Jesus says, no, if I don't stop them, the rocks will sing out.
Yeah.
And so then this draws your attention back to this picture of the new heavens and the new earth with all creation celebrating the king, right? Mm. And that to me was wild because I do think that they're, all of these things, they're referencing victory, they're referencing celebration, they're referencing all kinds of different things. But I think that in the midst of this picture where Jesus comes in with his feet dragging on the ground on a weird looking donkey, he comes in and there is a glimpse just for a moment of the new heavens and the new earth with the king finally installed. That is wild to me.
Yeah. And I love the contrast of these like hidden glimpses of absolute glory and perfection mixed with these like mixed motives.
Yeah.
That like, you know, God didn't come to overthrow like we thought, like we asked for. Mm-hmm. He came to overthrow in the way that we actually needed.
Right.
Which is so much more profound and kind of hints at that, the fullness of the kingdom and making everything right.
Yeah. And I think we can, this will lead us into a good conversation, I think. But, you know, one of the things that I came across as I was reading was that, you know, there was this idea that, you know, obviously the Jewish people wanted Jesus to set up this new kingdom on earth, right? They wanted freedom from their oppressors. And if Jesus had just given them freedom from their oppressors, they would have just turned around and oppressed someone else because they were the new leaders, right? And I think that really was kind of a snap in my mind and a reminder of this, like, yeah, the issue is not political. Like, we don't have a solution in a political kingdom on earth. Right. And because we've tried that and it's not working out so well.
Right. And you brought us back earlier in earlier chapters, to these other stories right before this and like kind of see the intention of the gospel writer here, about the kinds of people who came to Jesus and what they were looking for and how he responded to them. Do you want to just maybe like touch on those again really quickly?
So there's a lot if you go into Luke chapter 18 and then Luke chapter 19. But what you see right from the very beginning of this, I mentioned this, there's this picture in chapter 18, verse 9. It says, to those who are confident of their own righteousness. So there, it kind of begins with the people who are blind to their own righteousness. Mm-hmm. And then it ends with a blind man who sees.
Right.
Right. Like ding, ding, ding. Like
symbolism.
It's just, totally. And it's all on purpose for sure. Right. But you have these Pharisees who are, you know, thinking that they've got it all together. And Jesus says really clearly, you know, for those who are going to come into the kingdom, it's those who will humble themselves. They are going to be the ones who are exalted. The ones who are exalted right now are going to humble themselves. But then he talks about the kingdom again as he talks about the children, right? Because they all come running up and everyone's shooing them away. And Jesus says, no. I tell you, anyone who doesn't receive the kingdom like a little child will never enter it. And then later, again, there's this rich young ruler who comes along and says, hey, you know, how do I enter the kingdom of God? And he says, look, you know, well, you tell me. And he answers the questions all in the right way. And so people would have been saying, okay, here's a stand-up guy. He's got it all together. Yeah. Like, he's the one. And Jesus is like, yeah, no, not exactly. You don't quite got it. And the response of the people, I think, is really important to pay attention to, because their response in the moment, they're like, this guy is everything that I'm not. Like, he has influence. He's followed the law. He's done all these things. He's been successful in life. And so they say, who can be saved? And Jesus' response is, what is impossible with man is possible with God. And I think that, you know, reminds us of the children, reminds us of the tax collectors, reminds us of all the people who are broken who come to Jesus. Yeah. And you know, in our minds, if it was possible for us, we would be thinking, okay, I can just make my way there. I can earn my spot in the kingdom. And Jesus was quite clear. That's not how it works, you know?
And I love your referencing here, this idea of coming with humility, like a certain amount of need and like, you know, Hosanna, God save us. There was need there, but it almost wasn't. Because it wasn't the right need, it wasn't humble enough in a weird way. It wasn't enough to kind of like guarantee you're going to get what you want.
Because they were saying, save us from the Romans.
Right.
And
save us from our own brokenness.
Yeah. What the blind man said in this moment is he said, have mercy on me.
Yeah.
Right. He completely put himself in this spot of like, I need help and I know you're the one who can help.
Right.
And Jesus said, you got it. That's what I want all of the people of the kingdom to do. I want them to recognize their need, not because of other people who are bad. There will always be other people who are bad around us, but we need saving from ourselves. Yeah. It's a heart issue.
And I think it's, you know, obviously this comes before Easter, but I think it's a great reminder for us. Like, we want to celebrate the resurrection and we're going to jump into that next week, obviously. But like, it starts with this, like, have mercy on me, right? I need this mercy. How would you suggest we practice that, embody that this week? What does that look like?
Yeah, I think that the reminder that Jesus comes into our lives in a sense, the way he came into Jerusalem, and I'm sort of stretching here a little bit, but I think it really applies. It doesn't really matter whether things are going really well or things are going really poorly. And I think it's easy for us when we are struggling, when we are searching, when we're having challenges in our life to turn to Jesus and say, have mercy on me. Mm-hmm. But it's in the times when things are good, life is going okay, you know, bills are getting paid, you know, everything just seems to be going along, when we still can say, Lord, have mercy on me. Mm-hmm. That, I think, is an indication that we have our minds set on, you know, things above, like the Bible talks about. And so for me, I would say, you know, especially for us who are busy, distracted with things that are going on, and maybe things are going well, to remind ourselves that Jesus confronts us even in that, mm-hmm. and asks for all of us.
Yeah. I'm reminded, I think you've said this before. I think the stats support this. You know, one of the things that thrives in a recession in our world is the church, right? As people kind of see the need. And I feel like even our cultural moment we're in, you talked at the beginning of your sermon about kind of hope in political systems, I think political discourse has changed. I think people are more frustrated, more angry, more unsettled for all kinds of reasons. So I'm just struck that this is kind of a timely thing, mm-hmm. to try to embody and try to, encourage those around us, right? Like, our hope doesn't lie in this party or that party or this leader or that leader. Like, we are part of the problem. And like, the answer is not our own wisdom. It's Jesus.
You know, I think the extreme nature, and maybe I'm saying way too much here on a, you know, Monday afternoon doing a podcast or recording a podcast.
That's what the podcast is for, Paul.
Yeah. But, you know, I think that what lies behind the anger and division and, you know, everything that we're seeing, all the nasty stuff we're seeing in politics right now, is selfishness. And I don't mean selfishness of leaders. I mean selfishness of us. Hmm. And the reason for that is that I think that there was a time when we recognized that politics were for the greater good, not just for me. Hmm. And so we had this idea that, I don't always like everything the other person has to say, but I recognize that I'm not the only person in the room.
Right.
And I feel like we've gotten to a place where we put ourselves in this place of importance. We sort of, you know, way over it should be. And because of this selfishness that I think that things should happen for me, it becomes far more divisive. Like, people are getting really angry, and because it's like, no, like, this is, you know, and so I think people are fighting for themselves and, you know, their own values or their own ideals. And that, I think, is actually at its root very selfish. Anyways.
So, I think that's really good. How do we engage in the world we're in, and in the world of politics, and learn to hold it more loosely with an open hand, with Lord have mercy being the main thing?
How do we
do that? How do we hold both of those things?
Well, I think back to, you know, what we've heard from a guy named John Mark Comer quite often, who says that we should be a non-anxious presence in the world. And I think that at its root, there's a peace that comes when we recognize that God's in control and that his kingdom is the one that really matters. And because I think that sometimes we get really worked up because we believe that if I don't fight, then God's kingdom is at risk.
Right.
And again, I think that just shows that we've got a completely wrong sense of self. Because no, I mean, like his kingdom is, you know, like, obviously we have a role to play and we have a part in all of that. But when we start getting really anxious about, well, what happens if the other party wins, or what happens if this then what we're doing is we're taking the sovereignty out of God's hands, and we're saying that we can control it all and it's all up to us. Mm-hmm. And I would say that there's a lack of trust in the midst of all of that, a lack of trust that God is in control. And I think that, so for me, the reminder is God is on the throne. in the person of Jesus, you know, ready and able to establish his kingdom. And I think that seeing him on the throne, seeing him for who he truly is a good way to prepare ourselves for Easter and to prepare ourselves for what seems to be a prolonged season of, an ideological battle and, right. And a very bitter fight.
Yeah. And for me, this is where the practices have been helpful. And I think I continue to learn in them because I'm by no means an expert. But like you talk about these, like there's kind of these profound fundamental truths, like God is in control, that I know and that are good, but I kind of have to decide a path between taking control myself and complete indifference because God is in control.
Mm-hmm.
And as I do that, I find like I stray so quickly. Mm-hmm. None of us ever hits that balance perfectly for a long period of time, right? Like I need to come back regularly to worship with community, to prayer, to Sabbath, to fasting, to these things that kind of recenter my heart and my life and my practices, all of my practices on the person of Jesus, on the fact that I need mercy, on the fact that he is in control. Just helpful for me to kind of think through how this goes with the practices and like our theology is not disembodied. These big, profound truths that we see laid out in the scriptures and all this wonderful imagery. It's not just like, check, I've got that kind of piece of my theology done. It's something I need to swim in it. And I like, sometimes I get off, so I need to come back. And that's where the practices help me in this.
Mm-hmm.
As we march towards Good Friday, and then Easter Sunday, Any advice you'd have for our church? Any things you'd offer as we've reflected on Palm Sunday and as we're moving forward? What would you tell us?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess my mind just starts going to Romans 12. You know, therefore, in view of God's mercy, offer your bodies as living sacrifices. And you know, to me, there's the idea of recognizing how often I put myself on the throne. Recognizing how often I want to or feel like I need to take control. This is a good time for us to remember God's larger picture, to remember his mercy. And in response, as an act of worship, you know, we become that living sacrifice. And, you know, I think we've all heard those sort of like graphic descriptions of the sacrifice kind of crawling up onto the altar itself, like putting ourselves there as a living sacrifice, you know, continually dying to ourselves. And I know this is all like, it sounds a little bit like religious speak, things that you've probably heard someone say at some point, but I think there's some profound truth in just this idea of continually sacrificing ourselves, you know, recognizing that, I'm putting myself on the throne again.
Yeah.
I'm going to take myself off the throne and I'm going to trust that God has put Jesus there for good.
Yeah. Trust that he is in control, which means I can't be, which is, always a fun one to wrestle through. Well, any other closing thoughts for us today? Any other things that you think would be helpful as we wrestle through this Palm Sunday,
one of the things I would suggest maybe is to go back to the parable of the 10 minas. And this is the parable that is told right before Jesus comes into Jerusalem. And it says very clearly that he tells this story because he was near Jerusalem and because they thought the kingdom of God was going to appear at once. And so he tells this story. The details of the story get a little gruesome, especially towards the end, because he like kills everybody and he's like, bring them here and kill them in front of me. Like, it's like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Nice way to end a parable. But remember, this is a made up story. This is not a real king. This is not a real story. And to the extent that some of the characters and, you know, whatever sort of reference God and, you know, it's not an exact or direct comparison.
Right.
But I would say that there's this picture of a person that, you know, becomes king and then goes away to be crowned king. And he leaves people on their own for a while, still under his authority. And the response of people is so wild to me, you know, like some people send a delegation and they're like, nope, we don't want this guy as king. And in this case, you know, there's stories that are similar in other passages that, you know, have three servants or whatever. This one has 10. We only hear about three of them. Like, what happens to the other seven? Right. You know, they're never heard from again. I don't know. They took the money and ran for the hills, right? They opened a bed and breakfast and started a business. I don't know. But my point is that, that people respond to Jesus in very different ways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that obviously the story reminds us that the way to respond to Jesus effectively is to see everything that we have as a gift from him and to leverage that, those opportunities and those gifts to serve him to the best of our ability. And I think that Palm Sunday reminds us that when Jesus comes, he comes with compassion, yes, but he also comes as King and Lord. And there is no option for some kind of middle ground. You know, we take Jesus as King or nothing. And so when we put him on the throne, that means that we take what he's given us and we use it for his glory. And I think that's what we can start to think about as we move into Easter.
That's great. We're going to wrap it there. We will be back next week with more Postscript after Easter. So we'll probably be a bit later next week. Thanks for listening along, and we will talk to you then.